This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita!
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I'm Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
A lot is happening with Michigan athletics. Juwan Howard is out as the men's basketball coach. The women's basketball team learned its NCAA tournament draw. The hockey team will play for a Big Ten championship. And the football program is making news off the field. We'll discuss all of it coming up on Wolverine Confidential. Okay, guys, good to be with you here. Monday morning, March 18th. It's the day after Selection Sunday. You guys got your brackets filled out already?
I haven't even started yet. That's like I need to wait a day or two to let you know the experts put out their tips and their projections, and then I'll try to piggyback off those because I have not watched enough. With Michigan being so bad this year, I watched even less college hoops than normal. So I'll be relying on the experts for this year's bracket.
I have one draft done, but I'm sure it's going to change in the next 24 to 48 hours. But I do have one done, yes.
Very good. Zook, don't listen to those experts, Zook. They don't know anything anyway. They don't know.
All I want is just for whatever champion I pick for the MLI bracket to just at least make it out of the first round or potentially maybe the second round, because I have had awful luck with just crazy upsets in the first round with my MLI picks over the last couple of years. So I'd like to be in the running after the first week.
Before I submit my stuff, like when I get an Andrew's pool and some other stuff, I want to know who your champion is, Zook, so I know not to pick them to go for.
Cheater.
Please know I already have a note about this for later in the podcast. We will discuss Zook's picks. It's maybe not as bad as he's making it you think it is, but let's get to the biggest news since we last recorded. Juwan Howard is out as the Michigan head men's basketball coach after five seasons on the job. It was both surprising and completely understandable, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know, do we need to rehash the season that was or his overall tenure? I'm not sure that's like a deep dive is necessary, but I guess I'll just do the Cliff Notes version here. We can do that.
Or you can just refer to a statement he made. He made sure to highlight his career highlights in his statement after he was fired.
He did, which, yes, he brought up several times throughout the year. I don't know. Okay, five seasons, right? Incredible start. They had that Thanksgiving tournament win in the Bahamas. They ended up finishing 10-10 in the Big Ten. They were in line to make the NCAA tournament 6 or 7 seed probably before it was canceled. Year two, wins the Big Ten, number one seed, Elite Eight, program is rolling. Sweet 16 the next year as an 11 seed, however, missed the tourney last year, 8-24 this season. So like overall, you know, 3 out of 5, you know, because one wasn't played, but they would have made it. NCAA tournaments, including that Sweet 16, including an Elite Eight, including a big title, Big Ten title. But like, it's not like he was taking over some like, you know, moribund program, you know, like it's the trend, right? It's the trend. It's the opposite of what you'd like to see. And then you throw in off-court stuff, which Ward Manuel, the athletic director, didn't directly reference in his statement, which, you know, basically if you want the key lines from that, it's, you know, after a comprehensive review of the program, .. It was clear that the program was not living up to our expectations and not trending in the right direction. You know, the flip side of that, the man did have open heart surgery in the fall. And I don't even mean that like Ward should, he himself should have a heart and not fire a man who has, you know, had heart surgery, you know, within the year. But I do think it affected the on-court product to a certain extent. And on top of that, Ward showed, you know, support as recently as last month. I mean, both of you guys, you know, talked to him and, you know, heard what he had to say. He wasn't thinking about a change at the time, but, you know, Michigan didn't win another game after that second time he spoke, and many of them weren't close. And more reports came out about, you know, kind of the Sanderson stuff and the culture. And I don't know, it's information that Ward had, you know, he should have had, you know, before it came out. But I don't know. I think about how he handled the hockey situation, like, you know, it becoming public was a bit of a game changer for him. So, I don't know. He talked about the players' effort after the game. You know, he thought, you know, after the last week, the Big Ten tournament loss, he thought that they still were playing hard. And, you know, he seemed to say that was a sign of good coaching and the players that were engaged. He said he was going to act quickly, which I walked away from that thinking it meant he's going to, you know, endorse him right away. So there's no doubt about it. He's our coach going forward. And, you know, we're going to make some other changes, but, you know, I still believe in him. But Friday afternoon, 2:00, he was fired. And, yeah, you know, he let Juwan know and then let the public know very quickly, you know, before Juwan could even talk to the team. Juwan then, you know, did talk to the players, but they had already seen, you know, the social media announcement. So yeah, Howard is out after 5 seasons. I guess we'll, you know, what is your guys' initial reaction to it?
My biggest takeaway, I guess, is that losing streak that you referenced toward the end of the season, it's probably what pushed Ward over the cliff, I guess, so to speak, in making the decision. Like you said, when he spoke to us a couple of months ago, he almost sounded remorseful for like Juwan's heart condition. Like it was something that he was like weighing, like in terms of balancing things out, in terms of the season not being what it was. They were struggling on the court. You know, he wasn't necessarily at that point, at least he didn't signal an intention to move on from him. But I got to think, as you said, the losing streak, some of the uncompetitive performances, then you mentioned the Sanderson stuff that came out. I think that was probably the final nail in the coffin, just in terms of, I got to think he weighed, you know, viewpoints from differing factions at the university, whether it's from the administration, donors, boosters, you know, alums and everything else. And that's what you factor in, you know, when you're an athletic director. Like, this isn't necessarily solely your decision, but you're weighing all these opinions and thoughts from other people. Because if you continue on with him, whether it was, you know, 1 year, whatever the case may be, you realize that, like, you know, there isn't going to be necessarily a ton of support going forward from everyone else. So there's probably the right move. You know, if I was Ward, I probably would have made it sooner, but nonetheless, I think he made the right move at the end of the day.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't seem like there's been any sort of like blowback for Michigan firing him. I haven't seen anyone like, I can't believe they fired Juwan. They should have given him more time. Like, it seemed like it was a welcome move from the people that I'm in circles with and just online too. It seems like it had to be done. Like, people were appreciative of the good years, but again, like, a lot of that goes back to the roster construction. A lot of that was John Beilein guys. And yeah, he added a few pieces in that contributed, but now that it's all his roster and last place in the Big Ten for the first time since like the 1960s too, like, that's, you just never could have envisioned that with Juwan Howard Michigan team a couple of years ago. But I mean, it's just how things have unfolded. And it just seemed like this program needed a change of scenery. And I think, yeah, it's not surprising to me, and it'll be interesting to see who they get. But yeah, I think that the program is probably in a better spot going in another direction.
Yes, I heard from, you know, another athletic director before Juwan was fired, basically saying if Ward sticks with him, you know, for another year, and it goes poorly again, like, who are the, you know, regents, you know, the president, alums gonna come after? Going to be Ward. And there was not a lot of optimism for next season. You know, even if he stayed, look at the roster, and look at, you know, potential, you know, guys leaving. I think this would think coaching changes just lead to transfers, even more transfers to begin with. Heck, there's already a report that George Washington III is going to be entering it opens today. And that report came out yesterday. I mean, shoot, like basically Will Treader and Terrence Reed Jr. are the only two guys I would think maybe even like have a chance at returning to this roster as returning players. So, you're going to start fresh. I think the idea is why not do it then with a new coach? You know, you have a bad season with the first year coach, you know, you could swallow that a little easier than, you know, a guy in his sixth season. So yeah, that'll lead us to who the next coach is. I don't know. You guys got any names? Cause I put out an initial list that just kept getting longer. I was like, I got to hit publish on this thing. And I just kept adding names.
Dude, I couldn't believe how long that list was. I'm like, most people are like, yeah, five candidates to replace Juwan Howard. And I read Andrews and it's like, dude, who are you? Like, what is like, the, come on, man. It was like, how many words did that end up being? That was insane.
Yeah. You know, Red Auerbach was not on the list. If you were a living coach, you were on there, but, and I had him on us and, you know, some were dismissed, but they were names that people might think of. And it was like, well, here's why it probably won't work. So it was kind of a combo list. Was I a little bit scarred from the last coaching search when John Beilein left and Juwan Howard ended up getting the job, where my initial list did not include the guy who actually eventually got the job? Maybe. Now, my defense for that remains Ward Manuel, and he really only made one statement. I think it was at the NBA draft lottery about who he wanted to hire that time. And he said he wanted a guy with head coaching experience.
And Juwan had none of that.
I limited my candidate list to guys who had that. So that's why Juwan wasn't on it. But anyway, I don't know. Maybe let's narrow it down to two or three right now. And I'd say Dusty May, Florida Atlantic head coach. You know him from the run to the Final Four last season, followed it up with an NCAA tournament bid again this year. Didn't win the conference, not the regular season or the conference tournament in the American Athletic Conference, but still, you know, strong season. They're what, 8 or 9 seed. A lot of people think they're a little overseeded, but so be it. They're back in it. He's young and obviously has done well. Not a super long track record. TJ Otzelberger at Iowa State. A lot of people thought they could be a 1 seed after winning the Big 12 conference tournament. They're a 2. Finished second in that very difficult conference. You know, he's got a little bit of a longer track record. He's been a head coach, you know, a few other places as well. Midwest guy, young on the younger side. So those would be, you know, two names that jump out to me. And then a third, I don't know. Like, do you go with the guy at the mid-major, DeVries at Drake or someone like that, or Nico Medved at Colorado State, who's got a lot of Beilein in him, I think. Like there's those guys that haven't proven it on the bigger stages yet. But yeah, it's tough because there's no obvious guy, right? This isn't the much different than like the football coaching searches where, you know, the first time around was like, you know, way back when Harbaugh was like clearly the guy, the golden boy. And then this time it was pretty obvious, just, okay, the easy move at least was just to promote from within. So there's none of those candidates. And there's no who was like an assistant at Michigan who's now a head coach somewhere else doing well. Like there's none of that. So it's tricky.
I'm going to ask the obvious question. Before I ask the obvious question, I guess Dusty May seems like the headliner to me. I mean, I've got friends who are big Michigan basketball fans, season ticket holders. He seems to be a top of their list. So I got to think he's probably up there. But I'll ask the obvious to you. Will Ward Manuel call John Beilein? Is he considered a candidate in your mind?
It did not, you know, end super well with Beilein and Ward. I mean, you know, Ward found out John Beilein had taken the job, was leaving Michigan when he called him to say, I have taken another job. Not like they reached out to me or I interviewed or I'm thinking about it. It was a done deal. There was nothing Ward could do after that. And he made that public. And, you know, I don't think that sat particularly well with him. You know, would Beilein be interested? I think maybe a little bit more than people might realize. You know, whoa, why would he want to come back? Why would he want to get into coaching? I mean, these people are super competitive and, you know, it's easy to miss the game. So he's 71 years old. So I think you know what you'd be getting, which is just maybe a few years of trying to restabilize this program to pass it off to the next coach in better hands. It's a new world with NIL and the portal. you know.
Yeah, that's what sticks out to me is I don't know if he wants to jump into that wild, wild west of college athletics right now when he's in his 70s. That seems like a lot to ask. But, I mean, who knows? But, yeah, I probably wouldn't be my first choice if I was Ward.
Yeah, I mean, you've been seeing fans saying this for months, really. Beilein come back. He tweeted something about, you know, Duncan Robinson doing have some NBA milestone recently or just yesterday. And I mean, those were replies I saw were all, please come back, come back, come back, come back, save us. So yeah, I mean, he was the perfect guy at the time, but you know, running it back with him, maybe, I don't know. I don't see Michigan going in that direction. You know, there's another retired guy who's younger and has had even more success at the college level, though no connections to Michigan, no real connections outside of the Northeast. That's Jay Wright, also doing television work right now. But like, again, why would he do it? You know, it's probably a pipe dream, but you make the call, right?
He's really only 62.
Jay Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but yeah, obviously, you know, some of these other guys are, you know, low 50s or 40s.
I think he would be the home run hire. Like,
right, you're talking about.
Yeah, I think Jay would be the home run hit. I don't know if, like you said, I don't know if he'd be interested. I don't know if he would do it. It would probably be a lot for him. Again, with that, I don't know if there's any desire for him to get back into the college coaching game. But I think if you could get anyone, if you get him to like pick up the phone and entertain an interview or a phone call, I think you at least got to try. Why not?
Sure. You know, there's obviously Michigan has its own staff in place under Howard already that, you know, is now, of course, in limbo. You know, I'll just be honest. I mean, Phil Martelli, it doesn't seem like, you know, he'd be the guy you turn to be the head coach at this point either. Howard Eisley, the same. Saadi Washington, you know, got a look last time. So, you know, why not him? He's obviously had, you know, success on the Beilein staff previously. But you just wonder if Ward wants, you know, kind of more of a clean break from everything, you know, about this Juwan Howard era and moving forward. Typically they use search firms for this kind of thing. You know, I've got an idea of which one Michigan's, you know, using, but, you know, what does that mean? It means that I find this to be kind of funny. I don't know about you guys. I think, like, I don't know, here in Ann Arbor, they're going through a superintendent search right now, right? And they use a search firm. I get that. You're not going to be aware of like who's doing well in that field all over the country, right? But like, don't you kind of know who the coaches are? Like, there's not a large number of guys you're probably choosing from.
I've always wondered about that myself because you see schools do it all the time with football coaches, basketball coaches, and it's like, can't you just kind of look along the landscape and find your own person? Now, obviously, search firms do help because they have connections. They might know how to reach out to a candidate or a potential coach, maybe behind the scenes via a third-party source. And that's kind of what I think the whole point of a search firm is to kind of absolve a school of a potential lawsuit for tampering or whatever the case may be. But
yeah, a little more discreet. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, again, can't you just pick up the phone and you know, call an agent? You know, it's pretty simple, but I don't know. What do I know?
Yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder sometimes. Okay, what is the athletic director actually doing then? If he's just, you know, outsourcing the job search too. But so be it. Yeah, I think it makes things a little more discreet, I guess. And I guess it's just as far as what I'm getting at, as far as the timeline, you'd think, you know, a lot of the coaches they're targeting are preparing for NCAA tournament games this week, and you know, hope to win a game or two or three. So, not that those overtures can't be made beforehand. But, you know, as far as, you know, finalizing things and announcing it, I wouldn't think it'd be happening this week, but you never know. You know, Ward said he'd be very quick with his decision on Juwan, and he was. But, you know, didn't in his statement, didn't give any timeline for this other than that the national search was, you know, to begin immediately.
One last thing on this, Andrew. I saw online that there seems to be a lot of competition for open jobs. What are some of the other jobs that Michigan will be kind of in battling for maybe some top candidates for?
Great question. One of them, the main one, is now no longer a competitor, and that's big for Michigan. It's Ohio State. You know, they decided to you know, take the interim tag off Jake Diebler and make him the head coach. So, you know, that's a school that has a lot of similarities to Michigan in many ways. And to not be competing with them is good. you know, the Louisville job is open. That's a big one. That's you know, are they above Michigan on the pecking order of, like, you know, basketball programs? It's hard to say. I mean, historically, maybe, probably yes, but more recent history, maybe no. And then it's like the conference you're in. It's, you know, sometimes you want to go to a conference where you know it's maybe less competitive, easier to win and get into the NCAA tournament and whatever. But in this changing landscape, maybe you just want to be in the Big Ten or the SEC for that, you know, security blanket. I don't know. Things are changing in that regard. It's hard to say. But yeah, that's probably the big one. That's you know, Stanford is looking for a new coach. Yeah, I mean, there's dozens of jobs have already, you know, opened, and some have already been filled. But you know, I think Louisville is kind of a big one, and with Ohio State off the board. So yeah, we'll see where Michigan goes from here. The women's team is in the NCAA tournament six straight time. They are a 9 seed. They will face 8 seed Kansas in the first round. Did not know their day or time or TV network for at least the first few hours after the bracket was announced, but what we did as of this morning, it's Saturday. The tournament, the first round starts on Friday. Everything's just a day later than the men's side. But they play Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 11 local time in Los Angeles where they'll play. It's on ESPN News, which I know maybe some people aren't thrilled about. They'll have to either find that channel or hope they have it. But yeah, it's, you know, Michigan did get in. It seemed like the team wasn't so sure, but I don't know. I was, mostly because Charlie Cream at ESPN was, and yeah, they get a 9 seed. Kansas is, 19-12 overall, finished 7th in the 14 team Big 12. They got a freshman guard who leads them in scoring. The next three top producers are all fifth year players. You know, two of which have been at Kansas their entire career. The other is a 6'6" center who blocks 3 shots per game. The Jayhawks won the NIT last season. They looked like they were heading there again, but they won 9 of their last 11. So they're hot coming in. I don't know. I'm not trying to scare our listeners. This is an 8-9 game, right? It's, you know, supposed to be a toss up. The winner will almost certainly face the host of this little 4-team pod, which is number 1 seed USC, assuming the Trojans can beat 16 seed Texas A&M Corpus Christi. And I am willing to make that assumption here on the Wolverine Confidential podcast. So that game would then be Monday. You know, USC has the top scorer in the country, not named Caitlin Clark. That's Juju Watkins, just an outstanding freshman.
Great name.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the Portland 3 regional. There are, you know, there's a 4 quadrants to the bracket, right? And you know, the men have 4 locations for those Sweet 16 and Elite 8 games. The women, as of last year, only have 2, and you know, one is in Albany, New York. The other one is in Portland, Oregon, which is where Michigan is and where they'd play if they can, you know, win 2 games, but, you know, have to get by Kansas and then, you know, USC next, which, I think we talked about this on the pod that, you know, you want to make a run, you'd rather be that 10 seed than that 8-9. And, you know, that's where Michigan landed. And now they, you know, potentially in the second round have to play one of the best teams in the country.
Better than having to face potentially South Carolina. So that seems like the worst potential draw. So at least it's not the Gamecocks.
Yes, that is true. I'll be talking to Kim Barnes and Rico shortly here, but we didn't want to hold up the pod too much. So if you want more reaction to the news and more about the matchup, you'll have to read words on mlive.com/Wolverines later today. But yeah, the women are dancing, headed out to Southern California to try to make another run. They've won at least 1 game, you know, in their last 6 or 7 appearances in this thing. So, you know, in a couple of deep runs recently as well. So that's the hope for Michigan again this time. We've got football news as well. Like we said, there's been some news on the coaching front, and you got to talk to some coaches. I'll start with the thing that interested me the most. Michigan poached you know, longtime assistant coach from Ohio State. That seemed like a big deal and a good get for Michigan. Yes.
Yeah, interesting move. It kind of came out of left field, but it sounds like it's been something that was in the works for a few weeks. Tony Alford, long time, and I say long time, he'd been there like 9 years. The span past Ryan Day and Urban Meyer's tenure. Tony Alford, running backs coach. He is now the running backs coach and run game coordinator for Michigan. Interesting move. A lot of parallels to when Greg Madison kind of left Michigan for Ohio State a few years back. To somebody who'd kind of has been, you know, been with the previous program a long time, worked for multiple coaches, been really involved with the game plan. He's now on Jerome Moore's staff. As I said, kind of came out of left field, but it was an interesting kind of headline grabbing move. My suspicion is, and we haven't gotten his contract in yet, but we'll have it probably next week or two, is he did some type of pay raise. He was, I think, the highest paid running backs coach in the Big Ten to begin with at Ohio State. He was making over $700,000 a year. So I suspect he's getting some type of raise out of this. But yeah, intriguing move. Generated a lot of conversation, as you would expect, on online and social media. Just kind of another, I guess, you know, fuel to the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry, so to speak. So yeah, Tony Alford, he's 55 years old, former running back at Colorado State. He's had stops as well at Notre Dame and Louisville and Washington and Iowa State. So long time, you know, tenured running backs coach. He did a pretty good job at Ohio State, you know, mentored some of their top backs, and going back to J.K. Dobbins and currently Travion Henderson and, you know, Trey Sermon. So he's good. It sounds like a good talent developer. You know, he's worked with some high level running backs. We'll see how he does on the recruiting front, because again, another older guy. But certainly, I think certainly a good addition for Mike Hart having left.
Yeah, you mentioned the Greg Madison parallels, but like what I find interesting is like it's not like Madison was from Michigan or Ohio State, whereas Tony Alford is from Ohio too. So like the fact that an Ohio native is switching sides in the rivalry when he's probably been in that in the Buckeye side for his entire life is kind of surprising. But yeah, it will be really interesting to see what his contract looks like, because on paper it looks kind of like a parallel move when he's was on track to coach some of the best running backs in all of college football this year at Ohio State, and he's going to Michigan where there's no Blake Corum anymore. Obviously there's still Donovan and some other guys behind him, but yeah, it's caught me off guard, and I think it will help in recruiting, especially compared to Mike Hart. I mean, it didn't seem like Mike Hart was very involved on the recruiting trail, and Tony Alford has a pretty extensive track record and has landed some key guys, not even just at the running back position, but elsewhere too. And he's with Steve Klinkscale moving on to the Chargers. This will definitely help Michigan kind of maintain some roots in Ohio, because I mean, they've started to make some headway and capitalize on their recent win streak there in recent years. But with Klinkscale and an Ohio guy moving on to the NFL, it's like, oh man, is that pipeline going to dry up? Maybe not, now that Tony Alford is on board too. So that'll be an interesting storyline to follow.
You wonder if he felt like he went as high as he could have gone at Ohio State, right? Like he was always running backs coach. Yes, he was named run game coordinator and assistant head coach, but he was never named offensive coordinator. In fact, he's never been a coordinator during his college tenure. So I wonder if there's just a feeling of maybe it's a little instability there, given the unknown, the future with Ryan Day and the pressure on Ohio State and everything else. He kind of gets a fresh start at Michigan with a new head coach, new situation. Yes, it's a similar role, but maybe he thinks one day he can eventually become a coordinator. I don't know. But there's certainly, you know, probably some internal stuff that prompted this, kind of like when Madison left Michigan under Jim Harbaugh. I don't know if he'll talk about it, but it certainly will be interesting to you know, speak to him the first time he does his media availability this offseason.
So is he expecting Kirk Campbell to be fired after a year, couple of years or two? I mean, it's like Kirk Campbell seems like an up and comer and could potentially be there for a little bit too. But yeah, who knows? It will be interesting to see how things play out. But yeah, I mean, Michigan has a new head coach too, and a new coordinator. So I don't know.
Yeah, wild to think about how, you know, the tables have turned with Michigan and Ohio State, and that you would even be saying something like that, and we wouldn't be laughing in your face. It seems like it could be very, very true. Another new coach, the new defensive line coach, Greg Scruggs. We're talking about him for a different reason. He was arrested. I saw that email with the statement from Sherrone Moore. It's like, my first thought was, yep, welcome to being the head coach, Sherrone. Like, now this stuff, you know, is your problem to have to deal with. What is the latest on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time we've had to deal with this here at Michigan in a while, at least this specific situation. Yet Greg Scruggs was arrested by Ann Arbor police early Saturday morning. I was told around 3 a.m. Wasn't given location. We don't know that just yet. But we were told he was arrested for operating while intoxicated. Again, we don't have a lot of details. I don't know what he blew. I don't know what his situation was. We'll find that out in due time. We did request the police report, but they did tell us he was arrested. So he's been indefinitely suspended by Sherrone Moore. I don't necessarily know what that means. I suspect they're kind of waiting on the details to come out to weigh the situation, because this isn't the first time Greg Scruggs has been arrested for operating while intoxicated. He did it while he was a senior at the University of Louisville back in 2011. So it has been a while. There have been reports that he was arrested a second time in the Seattle area when he was a player for the Seahawks. I wasn't able to find that, but nonetheless, this isn't the first time he's gone through this situation. So decision has to be made here by Sherrone relatively quickly. Like I said, I think they're waiting on details to come out and everything else. I could see this going either way. I could see Sherrone giving him another chance. And his statement he put out Saturday, shortly after the news broke, seemed to suggest maybe he's willing to give him one. You know, he said that, you know, Greg came out and was honest and forthcoming and took responsibility for the situation. But at the same time, like I said, this isn't the first time this has happened. So Sherrone will have a decision to make, a big boy decision, like you said, kind of the first one he's really had to make. And if he does decide to move on from Scruggs, then he would certainly have to find a new defensive line coach, which would restart the clock there. Because remember, I mean, they begin spring practice today. So someone's going to have to step in the time being. And if Sherrone, chooses to move on from Scruggs, he's going to have to find another defensive line coach. So unfortunate situation, not something you want to see happen, especially for a new hire. You know, he was formally announced 10 days prior to his arrest. Now, he'd been on staff a little bit longer than that, but not something you want this early in the tenure.
Just when you thought that Sherrone had his staff finalized and this wrinkle gets thrown in there, and it's like, oh, well, are we about to go through another coaching search? And this terrible timing too, literally the weekend before spring practices have started. The defensive line was supposed to be one of their strengths heading in this year, and it's like, if you're trying to fight off other teams from grabbing your Mason Grahams and your Kenneth Grahams, I mean, you want probably some stability there, and then this happens. I mean, who knows what will happen, but not a good look before spring practice starts.
You guys were able to talk to both new coordinators. Kirk Campbell is new in a sense. He's obviously been on the staff as a quarterback's coach and filled in as an offensive coordinator at least once during his time here. Don Wink Martindale is, the new defensive coordinator. What do you guys, when you say his name before your question, what did you say the other day? I didn't watch the video. Or do you just avoid saying his name at all? Or just say coach?
I called him Don. Other people called him Wink. He said he's used to both. I think he's used to Wink maybe more than Don, just because it's kind of latched on. But yeah, I guess it varies and depending on person. I at least personally though, I feel weird calling people by nicknames when I'm not close to them. It seems weird to me. You know, that seems like something that a friend would call you. You know, but
right.
Nonetheless, it's certainly caught on. Like I said, it's something everyone seems to call him that. So
someone asked him if he's met the other Wink Martindale too. So he said he has. So it was honestly, I really enjoyed his press conference. I mean, I think he's going to be fit in nicely. He's a great storyteller. What I found interesting too, like he was asking people, like he wanted to know our names too before we asked the question and would repeat our names. You said Ryan or you said Andrew or Aaron. Like he seemed like he was interested in kind of at least starting the process of getting to know the local media too. And yeah, I thought it was, he had some fascinating stories and some comments. And yeah, I mean, too early to tell what the impact will be on the field, but it seemed like, yeah, I like the hire so far as the way he handles himself with the media.
He did acknowledge too that he is a little more aggressive than his predecessors, Jesse Minter and Mike McDonald. So obviously it's still early. He's still kind of getting to learn the names of the players and personnel and everything, because he did get questions about certain position groups and players. And he was real hesitant because I think he doesn't know a whole lot. Obviously he's still learning. He was just hired, gosh, what, 6 weeks ago. So, but you know, he did make some passing reference that he is, you know, he's kind of stuck in his old ways in some regard. Yes, he's willing to listen. Yes, he's willing to take feedback and everything, but you know, I suspect, and again, it's still early, but I suspect you're going to see a little more aggressiveness from this Michigan front this fall, just based on his early comments and, you know, the personnel that he does like.
I always like looking at the bio of the football coaching staff page on their website. There's, you know, 11 coaches. 9 of them are wearing traditional neckties. 1 is wearing a bow tie, and 1, yeah, just has like the golf shirt with the white t-shirt crew neck underneath. And I'm guessing you might be able to guess that last one is in fact Wink. Who do you think the bow tie wearer is? Have you looked yet?
I'm going to guess Lamar Morgan.
Yeah, that would have been my first guess too.
You are correct. Lamar Morgan, the bow tie wearer. Very good. Okay, yeah. So you kind of gave a little bit about what, you know, Martindale said about the defense. But anything more from him or from Campbell on the offensive side as far as, you know, kind of the key takeaways as spring practice is about to begin?
Yeah, I'll move over to the offense. You know, in listening to Kirk Campbell talk, and as you said, he's been on the staff now a couple of years, so he's not necessarily a new face, but he's in a new role being offensive coordinator. So he made it sound like he's using the spring as kind of an evaluation tool. He came in, there isn't necessarily a set plan with what they necessarily want to do. He says he's going to kind of mold the offense around their personnel. And he did point to some of the playmakers, right? Like Colson Loveland's back, Donovan Edwards is back. He mentioned a couple of the receivers. So the plan is to get the ball in their hands as much as possible, but it's hard to kind of, you know, scheme all that or plan all that when you don't necessarily know a quarterback. So, you know, they said there's going to be a 5-man race for the starting job at quarterback. It's still too early to dictate anything. In fact, he said the day one plan is to kind of go from the oldest to the youngest in terms of snaps. So there really isn't a carved out number one. And they're going to change day two, depending on what happened day one. So a lot more open on offense, a lot more undetermined, a lot more evaluating to do. They're probably gonna be a little bit more behind. So I'm really curious to see where the offense goes. You know, knowing Kirk's background, he does like to throw the ball a little more than maybe what Sharon and Jim and some of the previous, you know, coordinators wanted to do. So I'm not ready to say this is gonna be Michigan's gonna go full speed and space like a Josh Gattis situation, but I do think Kirk's maybe a little ready to maybe throw the ball a little bit more.
5-man race at quarterback. That's a big number. You guys think that's legitimate? Any of these 5 guys could be the opening day starter, or is that number really smaller?
I think Jaden Davis probably has the lowest percentage there, but I mean, Jack Tuttle, Alex Orji, and I mean, man, heading into last season, we heard a lot about Warren Davis as well. So, I think those 3 would probably be the top 3. And then, I mean, I don't know, Jaden Denadel has the size of an NFL quarterback, let alone a college quarterback. But I mean, we just haven't really seen anything from him in a game yet. So I don't know, I would think that Orji and Tuttle have the inside track at this point. But again, like it could be a toss up. I mean, and they're 2 different style quarterbacks too. So it's like, all right, what style does Kirk Campbell kind of want to go with? And which best suits this offense that doesn't have Blake Corum and doesn't have their other top couple receivers from last year.
I largely agree with what Ryan just said. I would be shocked if Jaden Davis won the job. I expect him to probably redshirt. It's probably going to be a learning season for him. But with regards to the other 4, it's literally, I think, a toss-up. It could be almost any one of them. Tuttle does have the experience. He does have the most starts out of the group. He's certainly the oldest, so I think that maybe gives him the built-in advantage early on, but we've seen him, and he's had health issues. He's had troubles, you know, completing full seasons. So like you wonder about that. And then Orji, I think maybe has the highest ceiling of them all, right? Like we've seen him a little bit. We haven't seen him throw the ball a ton, but he's this big hulking physical figure who can run the football. And from all accounts has a strong arm, but we don't know how accurate he is. Cause I think he's attempted 1 pass in his entire Michigan career. So there's work to be done this spring. Davis Warren, I think, is intriguing. I think he could work if with the right pieces around him. But I generally don't know. And I think that's what's going to be maybe the most intriguing this fall or this spring and the end of the fall is what happens at quarterback. Because it's potential, too, that they come out of spring not happy with any of them and turn to the portal and find someone else. But right now, it's I think it's a toss-up between the four.
We talked basketball. We talked football. Let's talk a little hockey here. Michigan hockey beats Minnesota and will play for a Big Ten title. Let's just start with that. Let's start with the win. Ryan, how did it happen?
Yeah, I mean, just a really great effort from all three periods. I mean, defensively, probably maybe one of the best games I've seen them play all season, especially against a high-powered offensive opponent like Minnesota. Yeah, I mean, they took a 2-0 lead into the third period, which we know always hasn't translated to wins for Michigan this year. And yeah, for the first 18 minutes, limited Minnesota's chances for the most part. And sure enough, the Gophers pull the goalie and St. Louis Blues first round prospect Jimmy Snuggerud with a snipe to get the Gophers within one with 1:29 remaining. And it's like, uh-oh. Buckle up. It's here we go again. Like last time they were in Minnesota earlier this month, they gave up 5 goals in the third and gave up the game tying goal late. And sure enough, they were able to close it out this time though. Minnesota had one final good look, a one timer kind of from the slot, but they missed the net. Overall, a solid performance by goalie Jake Barcheski. And Michigan's heading to the third straight Big Ten tournament championship. So it's crazy how they've been able to get hot this time of year. They had been on the bubble, and then now have won 6 of 7 to kind of cement their spot as a number 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. And yeah, they could head into with a lot of momentum if they can go to East Lansing next week and knock off the Spartans. It should be an insane atmosphere. A great hockey game. I mean, this Michigan MSU hockey rivalry is back, and I'm sure Matt Wenzel, our colleague from the Michigan State beat, will have some coverage leading up to the game, and he'll be at the game as well. So it'll be fascinating. It's good to see, and we'll see if they can three-peat.
First of all, just a shameless reference to the St. Louis Blues. I'm not mentioning the New York Rangers or the New York Mets ever on this podcast. None of the teams I prefer. So there's just no need to go out of your way to do that. But yeah, I mean, this is Michigan State for a title. That's pretty fun. Not that the Big Ten title being on the line isn't enough, but what else is on the line for really both these teams, if you don't mind, as far as the stakes for what comes next in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, for Michigan State, I mean, they also, if they win, they could also potentially get a number 1 seed in the NCAA tournament, so that's big for them. But like, it's more just like both these coaches were pretty good friends, head coaches were pretty good friends, and then last year with some comments, it kind of soured the relationship a little bit. So there's definitely a lot of motivation, and I think the Brandon Nerado has kind of heard some outside noise from people about, hey, Michigan State's back. Like, is this they're going to overtake Michigan? So like they're both trying to say like we're going to be the dominant program in the state moving forward. Like there's recruits watching. Like this is they're both recruiting the same type of prospects. I mean, Michigan State's goalie this year has been outstanding, a true freshman, Red Wing second round draft pick. And he had been committed to Michigan. So it seems like the start of a budding rivalry on and off the ice. And whoever can get this win can also get some bragging rights moving forward, too, and that momentum heading into the NCAA tournament.
This has been a long podcast episode. I got to hop over to this Zoom with Kim Barnes-Arico. But first, just general thoughts on the NCAA tournament brackets, because, I mean, you know I love it, and I try to loop everyone into it. Just quick questions here for you both. Start with the women. National champion, South Carolina or the field? Who you taking?
Probably South Carolina.
I gotta go South Carolina. Yeah, I mean 32-0. I mean, man, like, I mean, typically in women's, it seems like that top team always has a really good shot at winning it all. So I'll go with Gamecocks.
Fair enough. I saw the betting line on that. It was not exactly even. They were like -130 to win it all. And then, you know, so a little better than average. Obviously, they have not lost yet this year. So, you know, went into the tournament last year undefeated as well and lost in the semis to Iowa. So, yeah, Iowa, you know, Stanford, USC, UCLA, a lot of good teams out there to maybe you know, dethrone them. Only takes one game, but yeah, I can't. Hard to argue with that. The men's side, Zouk, you did break your streak last year. You had a tough run of what I call the six Xer, where the team you picked to win it all, you're making six X's on your bracket right away. But you had Alabama winning it all last year. They didn't do it. They didn't even get to the Final Four, but they won a couple games before they were upset by San Diego State. The M Live streak, though, continued. You passed the torch to one of our colleagues in covers the Spartans. We don't need to name him, but he had Arizona winning it all, and they were upset by Princeton in round one. So
no one had Purdue winning it all last year. Didn't Purdue lose as the number one seed last year?
Purdue did lose as the number one. I don't know if anyone had them winning it all, though. So I think we were safe there. It was Arizona that got us, but yeah, just sort of general. Any thought you want to give me, whether you wanted to give me a sleeper Final Four, a national champion, or anything you're excited about on the men's side.
I'll say this. In filling out my first bracket, I'm sure they're going to change. But like, I had a lot of chalk, like a lot more than I thought than normal. Maybe a couple of upsets, but nothing crazy, which scares me a little bit. I got UConn going all the way. I think Kentucky could be intriguing. They score a lot of points. They're a fun team to watch. They don't play a whole lot of defense, though, so I worry about them. Sleeper, I don't really have one. Maybe Creighton, although I don't really think you'd consider they're a three seed. But they'd probably be my under the radar pick, I guess, to go all the way.
I'm going to take Oakland over Kentucky and in my bracket. That's all I know at this point. I haven't really looked, but I'm going to go Grizz. Let's pull off the upset and see if they can make a little bit of a run under Greg Campy. But yeah, other than that, that's on my agenda for later this week to kind of sort all that stuff out. Exciting ending of the Players Championship went into the 6 o'clock hour, so I didn't even watch the selection show. So, yeah, I mean, it's golf season, man.
What I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds nice. It sounds exciting for you, sure. Yeah, I don't know, man. You guys asked me about the Big Ten tournament. Remember, is there a team I liked outside of those top couple seeds? And it was Nebraska, and they made a nice run to the semis and scoring a ton of points, and then they draw an 8 seed in the same pot as Houston, and it just broke my heart. So I haven't written that yet, but it's kind of tough when a team you're considering for the national championship is, you know, is there with your potential sleeper. So yeah,
man up, Con.
Maybe I got to do it. It's all interesting. I mean, Michigan, you know, they played a lot of several of these teams in the non-conference and ended up making it. You know, Oregon, they played out there and lost in overtime. They, you know, won the Pac-12 to get in, and Long Beach State, you might remember, that kind of started their demise early in the season. They lost to them at home, and Long Beach, after kind of agreeing to part ways with their coach, makes a run and gets in. There is a 15 seed, and what was the other one? McNeese State is in as well after winning their conference tournament. So there are 12 seeds. So yeah, several connections to Michigan in this bracket, and obviously a lot of coaches to be watching as well. You know, that could be making runs and then eventually parlaying that into a job in Ann Arbor. We will see. We'll have coverage of all of this on MLive.com/Wolverines. Thanks for listening.